And you're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And this is Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. Today we have a very special guest, David Savage, who is presenting a one-man show called Empath, opened at the Theater Lab in partnership with the Joy Effect. And this is a very special program that chronicles David's own spiritual coming out as an empath, a person hypersensitive to the emotions of others to the point of experiencing them as his own. And the story, the show, is part personal discovery and healing and part performance piece, in which he features readings with audience members. So that's pretty exciting. And it really just follows the chronicles of his life and the transformation from a skeptic to an empath. So welcome, David, to Heart of Mind.
Thank you for having me. I love the name of your show.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. Yes, it's so important to have both the heart and the mind. And I find it so interesting, your path as well. And I'm wondering, though you identified yourself as a skeptic, were you really in touch with your empathic nature as a child?
The answer to that is probably yes and no. Yes, in that I remember occasional experiences, very vaguely, where I was super sensitive to what was going on with the people around me, but I didn't have any way of understanding that, and I think what happened with me was that I more or less shut it down, and I became, as I discovered later, I think what I was doing was I was absorbing so much of what was going on with other people, and I had no way to process it, so eventually, like a pipe that got clogged, I couldn't take in anymore.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think this happens to a lot of children. We get shut down and then reawaken as we become adults. So can you tell us a little bit of your path? I know people will enjoy the show and get much more depth about it. But how did you rediscover your empathic nature?
Yeah, happy to share. And what I say now, I will enact with lights and music on stage. Mm. If you are inspired to come, so I'm not afraid of giving away too much. The story starts out about 8 or 9 years ago, and when I was totally lost and depressed and didn't know what to do, and I had a friend, Hannah, who suggested that I talk to her psychic. And I couldn't have had less of an interest in psychics. You might as well have told me that, I don't know, that I should talk to an alien. And and so I said, no, thank you, Hannah, whatever. And she, this kind woman, offered to pay for it. And something about that offer made me accept. And in that reading with the psychic, she told me that I had strong intuitive abilities and that part of my mission in life was to uncover them. And I dismissed that as a bunch of BS, but it didn't leave me. It just kept showing up again and again. And I started to have experiences, or maybe I'd always had those experiences, but now I started to notice where I knew things about people I didn't know how I knew. Eventually it became easier for me to accept that I had some kind of intuition that went outside the bounds of the way in which we normally accept how information travels. And further down the rabbit hole I went, the more I discovered that primarily, my primary, though not my only tool, my primary tool for gleaning information about what was going on was in my body. and that I was actually having the feelings or experiences of other people, and that's how I knew it was happening with them.
So did you go to any stage where you were getting sick or thought these things that you were picking up was reflective of your own condition rather than someone else's?
In terms of getting sick, I would say that if we want to call depression an illness, I would say that my heaviness had a lot to do with my just having been so overwhelmed by everyone else's stuff and not having any way to process it. And then in terms of my own stuff versus other people, what I've discovered since in doing a lot of work in this realm is that the stuff that is other people's that tends to stay stuck within us, if you're an empath, that stuff has a corollary within you. So if you're carrying a lot of anger, and then you meet someone who's angry and their anger sort of travels into you, you're much more likely to hold on to it because it taps into your own anger. Whereas if you're not carrying anger and you run across somebody else's anger, it might just flow through you. So a lot of what I was experiencing in others that was locking me up was stuff that was in me waiting to be unearthed and felt.
Mm-hmm. And how did you go through this process of discovering that, what your own issues were through this process, and how did you come to heal that, or is that sort of the fuel behind your creative work?
Well, take the first part of the question. I did everything. When I was in a depressed state, I was one of those people who, for some reason, within my depressed state, I made a vow to do everything I could to get out of it. So I started meditating, eating well, and exercising, and doing yoga through sheer will. And this is not easy when you're in a funk or really depressed state. It's hard to will yourself to do those things, but I was able to. And if you're not able to and you're listening, that's okay, too. I just happen to have the willpower. If you don't happen to have the willpower, don't beat yourself up. Depression's a bitch. But I did have the willpower. And that led me to eventually try plant medicine, which was really instrumental. Ayahuasca in particular. I've done about 50 or 60 ceremonies at this point of ayahuasca. For those of you who don't know what that is, I'm sure most of you do, but for those of you who don't, it's a tea that's originated in the Amazon that people drink now for healing. And it showed me this. It showed me how my emotions were stuck and how much of my emotions were others. And it taught me that if I wanted to release them, I had to go into them and experience them fully. And so I went through this. I learned how to do that through ayahuasca and then have applied that methodology when I'm not laying on the floor puking.
So I would love to, if you could give us some description or explanation of your ayahuasca experiences. I mean, I am familiar with it. I haven't had an opportunity to try it, but I do think that people would want to know what this is like. There's a point where you get sick, but there's a point where the information that comes through is mind-blowing or can be awakening.
Yeah. So the way it usually works is there's a ceremony. Ceremonies conventionally have been in Peru or in Colombia with the Shipibo tribe, but of course it's spread everywhere. And now you can find ceremonies in probably every major city. There's probably 10 of them going on tonight in New York, even though it's illegal, to be clear. But it's nobody's out there prosecuting it. So it's a thick, viscous, goopy tea that you drink. It tastes really foul, and then there's a feminine spirit that often comes in, though not always. And that feminine spirit guides you where you need to go. In my case, the first time I did it, I drank, and I was all ready to think through and figure out my problems. That was the state I was in. I was very mental. And the ayahuasca showed me that I was thinking entirely too much and that whatever I was suffering through was not going to be fixed in the mind. and she just started to contract my muscles. And when I say she just started to contract my muscles, I mean I had the experience of an entity or a being or a spirit coming through my body and pulling my muscles together and releasing them, and pulling my muscles together and releasing them. Whether that was my unconscious healing itself and then my conscious mind imagining a feminine spirit, or whether there's actually a feminine spirit working through my muscles, this seems immaterial. The subjective experience was that there was a higher intelligence. And in tensing and releasing my muscles, eventually emotions started to come out. It was as if I personally had emotions trapped inside my muscles. And that was incredibly illuminating for me. That's my experience, and that's exactly what I happen to need. Your experience, if you do it, will undoubtedly be different. It will be completely unique to you. And I have to say, since I'm essentially advertising for ayahuasca, it's been extremely helpful to me. It's also something to be extremely careful about in the following way. You want to make sure that the person who is pouring it, i.e. the shaman, is somebody you trust entirely, or somebody whom somebody you trust entirely trusts entirely. There are a lot of shady people out there taking advantage of people's desperation to heal, and not knowing what they're doing and not providing safe containers for the healing of trauma and worse. So please be careful. And when you drink the ayahuasca, you're drinking the shaman's energy too.
Well, that's a very good point. I really appreciate that. So when you were going through this experience of your muscles contracting and releasing, to me it makes perfect sense. I work with energy. I do energy healing and Qigong and various ways. I understand how emotions and really history, events, and their consequences are trapped in the body. But as you were coming and releasing that energy, if you will, how were you able to process it without being overwhelmed, or were you overwhelmed? Did it come through as a vision, as a sort of a gut emotion that you just had to travel through? How did that happen?
Well, I love that question. It was the ayahuasca herself was giving me what I could handle. So the emotions that were coming up first were easy enough to process. Literally something like, oh, I'm irritated. Why am I so irritated? I'm irritated because I was at the coffee shop earlier and the barista was irritated when she handed me a cup of coffee, and I must have absorbed her irritation. So now I'm going to feel that irritation, and now it's released, and I feel just a little bit better. Nothing overwhelming about that process. And then as I went deeper and deeper, I got to deeper feelings within me that I needed more practice to process. And another way of looking at this is that nature has created this complex human machinery to heal itself naturally at the rate that it can handle. And there's this kind of like impulse or deep urge each one of us has to handle. And if we can tune into that urge, then we'll be able to process, then things will come up to the extent that we can process. Where things get off center is when, to give an example, you go to a Tony Robbins event, and he, with all of his strength and power, says, go into your trauma. You can do it. Let's do this. And he opens wounds that aren't ready to be healed. And then you can get overwhelmed or shut down or worse. The trauma locks in even further. But if you can heed the more feminine, gentle, and loving approach to healing trauma, just following its natural flow, it will give you what you can handle.
That's very good advice for people, no matter what method they're seeking out, certainly. And so you said you did this maybe 30 times over a period. About how long a period did you have these experiences with ayahuasca?
Well, I've done it about 60 or 70 times at this point, and over the last 4 years. But you know, I was hesitant to say that, even though I've said it twice now, because ayahuasca was really good for me, but it's not it's not the path for everyone. And the underlying principle wasn't let me go find plant medicine and drink it. It was let me go find what is calling to me and listen and follow and listen and follow. And so there's nothing, I mean, there's a lot that's special about plant medicine, but there's a lot that's special about what you were saying, Qigong or yoga or Reiki or any form of, you know, music therapy, improv. I mean, any form of work that allows you to process some of the deeper stuff that's going on inside you and that feels true to you is the path for you. And it could be that plant medicine is that path, but it could also be that because plant medicine is such a powerful tool, people are drawn to it who may not even be able to handle it, or it's not really right for them, or they put themselves in uncomfortable situations. So follow your own natural path of healing by listening to your intuition and seeing what calls you is more important than ayahuasca, I think.
I certainly agree. I guess it is that I didn't, my natural curiosity about it, because it's not something that I've experienced. And so when I work with people, I work with people on a spiritual level, and I find the same thing is true. I might intuitively, as you say, know ultimately that this person was damaged at a certain age or was abused or had things going on in their life. I might not know what it is, but I can really feel the trauma. So I would never take that person into that trauma. You have to follow where the person is leading you, and inevitably it will be what they can handle. But also from the perspective of someone who is also a healer of self, you know, going into the depths of my own journey as you go into your own journey, as many of our listeners are following that path of self-healing as well. So my question is not so much just about the ayahuasca either, but that there's a certain drive that would carry you into these experiences. And from my perspective, these wouldn't necessarily be what one might think of as a happy or a good experience. Oh. It strikes me that you're taking yourself, you're sort of diving into your pain again and again and again. I may be wrong, but
no, you're right.
So that's really, I was looking for that kind of place that you're inspired to continue a path that in its essence is not the most comfortable. I mean, even just to re-experience the pain, but also I would imagine to face things about yourself that you don't necessarily want to believe is true or that you don't feel good about. So it seems like there's a lot of depths there that you experience in a relatively short period of time that people are taking their whole lives to process. So I guess I was just looking for something in there.
I love that. Can I elaborate? Because I love where you were going.
Yeah, please do.
And I love what you were saying, by the way. It's so important for us healers out there, intuitives, where we're sensing people's trauma. To see it does not mean we should say it. And it's not our job to go around pointing a mirror at things that people are not yet able to see. I think a higher question than what is true is what is of service, what will truly help another person. And that's from the healer perspective. From the Healy perspective, I'm curious, as you ask about myself, why was I so drawn to go all the way with this stuff? I feel like it wasn't exactly a choice. Maybe this just happens to be my journey in this particular life. I signed up for it. I think one of the reasons why I was able to make such progress in a relatively short amount of time with my own psychology was that I had always been desperately oriented around truth. and by that I mean my ego, for whatever reason, was invested in the truth. If this is true, I'm going to go with it. And that's rare. Most people's ego is not so invested in the truth. I would sabotage myself to hang on to a truth if it would have been healthier for me even to grasp onto a lie that was of more service. So I had this compulsion to see what is true, and that overrode what in other people might have caused them to not want to look inside. Oh, that's true. And for instance, if we'll take a really dark pattern of mine, you're saying things about myself I don't want to see. I've noticed I've had a multi-decade long tendency to really make people feel extremely vulnerable in romantic situations with women, to make people feel extremely vulnerable without being vulnerable myself, and then leaving them there to great pain. And I've witnessed this pattern in myself many times. I've hurt a lot of people. And I mean, it's really hard to see that about oneself. In other words, I've been a complete asshole. And I don't know, I don't know why I felt like sharing that, but I've been working on that, seeing that, trying to get to the heart of it, and trying to get to the heart of it with as little judgment as possible. What is really going on? Why am I doing this? What need is it meeting in me, and can I meet that need in a way that doesn't hurt people? And I, the last thing I want to say that's coming up is sort of good news and bad news. I'm pretty sure that the only way to fully heal yourself is to go through all the places where you're still holding pain and work through them. And once I discovered that, I couldn't go back. Like, okay, I have to go through everything. You know, there was a company that I started 5 years ago that's now worth a lot of money, and I was kicked out of the company, and it was really annoying and painful, and so I just sort of shut it out. And now the company is everywhere and very successful, and I keep trying to block it out. I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to see this. And that doesn't work. Eventually, I just have to sit in the regret and sit in the pain. And then next time I see the company billboard, I'm like, okay, that's okay. I can handle it. Like, everything gets to be dealt with. And there's so much liberation mm-hmm. on the other side of that, and integration, and feeling like one person instead of split all the time.
Yeah, I could really feel that in what you're saying. I appreciate that, because it is true that we find ourselves stuck in patterns and feel helpless to it. I know that I've been working with people who have all these creative ideas and passions and want to do things in the world, but they somehow are not able to face their lack of self-love or their lack of self-worthiness or some feeling that has somehow turned them against themselves in a way that keeps them stuck and keeps them blocked. So I appreciate the insights that you bring, because I see that people do. Most people are suffering on some level from this phenomena of our lives here on this planet.
So,
I really appreciate that. And as we are having this conversation, you spoke of yourself as a skeptic, and now you're fully embraced as an empath. So how would you perhaps entice people, if it's possible, to consider that there might be something below their skepticism about life and about things in general?
Well, we're talking about empaths. How many people out there have had the experience of being on a plane or at a movie theater or at a restaurant, and someone sits down next to you and your whole energy shifts? And it's not just because they're affecting you. It's that you're actually picking up on what they're feeling. So if somebody's really anxious, they sit down and now somehow you're feeling a little anxious. or somebody's really frustrated. Now, there's just this little tinge of frustration in you. That phenomenon where emotions are traveling across space is completely not understood and not really even accepted by science, even though it's a universal experience. Or how many people listening have known someone was going to die right before they died, or knew someone had died right after they died without anyone having told them, or knew somebody was going to call and then they called. The skeptics out there like to dismiss these phenomena as confirmation bias, that, oh, well, you remember the times when that happened and randomly this is going to happen a lot. But we know in our bones, and as I say this, you can feel it in yours, that that's not true. And mm-hmm. if you think about it, except for in the last few hundred years in Western countries that have been dominated by this new paradigm of empirically provable, except for that little glitch in the history of humanity, and only in these places, everyone else has accepted that spirits can talk to you, that information can travel across time and space, that our ancestors are with us, that there are divine spirits here to help. These are universal truths that have only been discarded at the same time that we've also done the worst things we can do to nature and to each other. So we all know it. It's not so much about convincing people. It's just about guiding people to remember what they already know in their bones. And what every child knows, that the world is a magical place. And if you start to over-explain it, it loses its magic. And the magic is truer than the lab coats would have us believe. And we all know it.
Mm-hmm. So true, so true. So thank you for that. I would like to talk more about your performance play, Empath. And can you... speak how you developed this and how it grew. Before we go further with that, I want to let people know that the show Empath did open at Theater Lab on Thursday, and it's going through till December 9th. And Theater Lab is 357 West 36th Street. And you can still get tickets, I believe, for these performances. And when you go to our website, prn.fm, look for the archive page, Heart of Mind Radio, and you will have a link there to get tickets, but also to find out about the show, the theater, the Facebook page, all that will be linked there. But David, can you give information basically for people if they just want to go right now and check out? Is there a website or something you'd like
you
to give?
Yeah, you can just go to, the easiest thing to do is go to my website. It's www.empath.nyc. Empath.nyc,
okay.
And all the information is there.
Great. And they can find ways to reach out to you if they should choose to, or connect with you once this theater performance is over. Excellent, excellent. So, tell us about how you made this creative expression out of your experience.
I have this, I guess you call it a vision. I just had a vision of doing a play. And then as soon as I had this vision, this man named David called me out of the blue and said, "Hey, I like what you're doing. Is there any way I could help?" And I said, "I kind of want to do a play." And he said, "I'll finance it." It was literally that simple. The universe was like, "Here you go." And,
wow.
And so before I had a script, I went to go look for a theater and I found this, I knew I wanted it in a white space. So much of my show is about being transparent. I'm doing psychic or magical things, but I want the audience to feel that there's nothing up my sleeve. And in fact, there's nothing up my sleeve. There's no tricks. I'm just sharing what I get intuitively. And I felt like a white space would be good for that. And there's only two theaters in New York City that are white spaces, at least in Manhattan. And I went to both of them. And the woman who runs Theater Lab, this woman, Orietta, and I just loved her. She's passionate and alive and exciting. And so I just said, this is it. And in April... I ran for three shows, and all I did, what I did was I just started telling my story to small audiences at first, just to get it ready, and then eventually to audience of 50 or 60. I just literally kept being like, I was in the East Village, and then I talked to the psychic, and I just kept saying it again and again until it cohered into a story. That's part of the play. And then the other part is these readings that I do in front of audiences, and I've been doing that for about a year. My readings are a bit dramatic. I use my body to express what it is the people I'm feeling are feeling. So I put these two pieces together, this narrative of my story and then readings toward the end of the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty amazing, actually. And I'm sure that people enjoy this. Can you give us a little bit of anecdote to some of these experiences that you've shared with people in the audience, what you were able to perceive, how they responded to it, that kind of thing?
Yeah, happily. Last night, during the show, I do these little spot readings when I'm discovering my psychic abilities, where I start just going up to people in the audience randomly and saying, here's what I see for you. And I went up to a woman, never met her before. I closed my eyes and I said, oh my God, there's a cat that you really have a deep connection with that is wanting to come through. And you're petting the cat in my mind, and this cat means so much to you. And as soon as I opened my eyes, she was bawling. I mean, literally, all I said was 10 words, and she was bawling. She's like, my cat just died, and I miss her so much. And so that the whole audience was like, whoa, that was awesome. These are not mm-hmm. audiences that are used to seeing this kind of work. These are mostly theater audience people, and they don't, you know, most people don't believe that that stuff is possible, and I'm being so transparent about it. Then in the readings, toward the end, trying to think of a good example. There was a woman who I read yesterday who I could feel was very sad about a relationship having ended. And she was the type of woman who normally is the woman you trust to tell you what to do, a very gentle and clear guide. But she was so disoriented about the end of this relationship that she had lost her ability to be that guide for people. And instead of accepting how much this relationship had cost her, how sad she was about it, and allowing the fact that she couldn't be a guide, she was trying hard to show up as this guide and feeling disoriented and frustrated that she couldn't. And so what I was able to say to her was, let that go. This is the time now to be sad. And don't hold yourself to the standard of being your best self right now, according to your idea of what it is to be a best self. Just allow the relationship to be sad. And then when you're ready, you'll come back to being who you really are. But for now, accept your disorientation. And I think that was really helpful for her to hear. Those are a couple examples from the show last night.
Wow, that's amazing. And as you were speaking, actually, especially with the last example, it really made me think about how this confusion is massive in terms of our societies and how we're living in the world today. I think that you have a great gift, and you've worked very hard to bring it to a level of deep potential, its full potential. But can you speak to sort of how what you've learned can be, if this information could be put out there and expanded and understood, how it might impact people on a much broader scale? Because people are very confused.
If there's one message, it's that what we're feeling is not up to us. This is the greatest teaching that I've had, and it runs up against so much garbage out there in the culture. people want to believe that they can choose how they feel. And you cannot choose how you feel. You can accept how you feel or fight how you feel. But the healing comes in the allowance of the experience and the acceptance of what's going on. Now, if you can't accept what's going on inside you, that's okay too. If it's overwhelming, that's okay. Don't force yourself. That's also going to cause more unnecessary pain. Distract yourself, and distract yourself with ways that are less destructive if you can. Like, my friend was just broken up with by his girlfriend, and he's completely lost, and he's in a loop. He's like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And there's nothing to do. He's just freaking out. And I'm like, dude, just take care of yourself and distract yourself. Let this pain keep flowing through you. And if it's too much, watch a movie. Like, go do something fun, and then you're going to be leveled again. I think what's going on is not just the intensity of the emotion, but it's that we problematize a intense emotion. We hold ourselves to this absurd standard of being professional or being on top of things or being together and all that. This is just language for repression. We prioritize the external over the internal, and I would like to see people prioritize the internal. What does my body need? What do I need as a human being right now? And if that means that I need to collapse and cry, then I'm going to collapse and cry instead of saying, well, what's wrong with me? Why am I collapsing and crying? Well, because you're hurting. But there's no reason for me to be hurting. No, there's a very good reason for you to be hurting, or else you wouldn't be collapsing and crying. So that's the essence of what I know about emotional well-being is feel it if you can, and if you can't, come back to it when you're ready, and whatever you're feeling is okay, and I'll go further. You don't even have a choice about it. It's just like what's going on through you. So accept it if you can.
Well, that makes perfect sense, because it ties back to what you were speaking of in the beginning about having all these emotions somehow trapped in our bodies, in the musculature, and probably in the organs, I would say, of past emotional trauma that wasn't allowed to flow and release. So at the very least, what you're saying is that let's not continue to do that.
Oh, God, let's not continue to do that. Yes.
And
that
things happen.
Yeah. And can we change the cultural narrative? Like, I mean, you go on Instagram and it's like, you decide your own reality. You walk into an office and give me an office that isn't results-oriented. And what does results-oriented mean? It means take whatever is personal and deep and intense to you and bury it so that you can get this goal. And like this, everything in our culture is oriented around the repression of what is actually going on and the prioritization of some external image of what we should be like. And I really want this to end.
Wow. I agree entirely. And I think that is, that really accounts for much of the suffering that I see and encounter, at least on that personal level. I have countless friends and acquaintances that are struggling with trying to meet some external goal, or as if to say that they could only be worthy if they are doing certain things in a certain way. And then that leads people into the judgment of others who are not able to have that level of willpower to force their soul into submission, is how it seems to me, to meet these external goals. So it's really quite a big thing, and I think that the work that you're doing goes a long way towards healing people, just by presenting it. But it's a much deeper path, I think, to really get this information into the world and into people's consciousness, especially when our media, mainstream media, is not going to support that.
No, but the one thing that we have on our side, though, is the flow of healing and life. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the amount of energy required to keep these lies in place, even if you just literally you turn on the television and you can see the stiffness and the artificiality of everybody, and all that stiffness and artificiality requires so much energy to hold in place. And there's the possibility that authenticity and deep human needs, when they're expressed honestly and openly, will just break through the noise because it's part of the natural flow of life and it wants to express itself. People don't want to be stuck in stories they barely believe because their ego needs it to survive. They don't want that. They want to collapse into who they really are. And ultimately, they're willing to go through any amount of hell if they believe that doing so will lead them home to a place of true belonging with themselves and with each other. And if we can teach them that what they're going through is okay, and that who they are ultimately is okay, and what they've ever experienced just needs to be processed and healed for them to reintegrate as their true self, they'll do it.
Yeah, I agree. Either that or they'll break down to the level that they have no choice.
Yes.
And I think more, as often as not, that's what happens.
That's true, too.
They hit the wall, and then they have to start putting the pieces together again. And hopefully people could realize before hitting that wall. But, you know, sometimes that's the best way or the only way. So it is kind of what it is. And just if you can speak briefly about just this concept of not just your theater performance, but the arts and creativity, I feel needs to be elevated as a true understanding of expression. So when I look at where we started with the ayahuasca, which is an ancient cultural tribal tradition, and other parts of those traditions are these other kinds of creative expressions, which are paintings, which you might see as wall paintings or statues, and dance and movement. And I think that people don't realize how much this expression, this creative expression, is a part of who we are as beings and not something, you know, that's just entertainment, though it can be entertainment. Do you have any thoughts on that?
The most powerful transformations are rituals. And this is built into our DNA. Something happens when people gather around a campfire that's just super deep. And we've lost the campfire, but thank God we still have the theater, or we have dance, or we have music. I'm talking about the genuine expression of the human artistic impulse, not the consumerist destruction of said impulse for the purposes of breaking into your brain and establishing a brand. I'm talking about the real thing, and you know it when you feel it. And my heart is so full even thinking about it, I can't find words for it. But this is how we learn who we really are. It is through creative expression that we learn who we really are. And it's the exuberant allowance of some essential nature of ourselves and of the universal to flow through us, and how that comes through reminds other people who are in witness of it that they have that too, and that we are all connected to something beyond ourselves. So for me, it often flows through, hopefully you can tell, in language. I have the capacity to channel truth through words out into the world in ways that resonate, and when I'm at my best, it's just beyond me. It's just flowing through me. And for others, it's dance. And for others, it's music. And for others, it's acting. And it really doesn't matter what your modality is. But whatever it is, that's your connection to universal truth. And you're going to feel called to it. And the more you express it, the more whole you'll feel and the more part of this great dance of existence you'll feel like.
Hmm. Yeah, so powerful. I think that you really are bringing to people a message of connecting to the essence of truth. You said you were in search of truth in the beginning, and you're demonstrating that that essence is right inside of us all to some degree, if we only have the courage to tap into it and set it free.
Yeah, I like that. I want to take a little bit of the burden off people, because it does take courage, and I encourage courage, but I think it's more about creating safety. And the more people feel safe, the less courage they need. If you feel like you're in a room full of loving people, and you might be a little bit shy about dancing, but you have an impulse to dance, and now you're in a room full of loving people who are not judging you at all and asking you what kind of music you'd feel good with, you're going to dance. But if you're still in a room with, like, judgmental people who are trying to look sexy and giving you funny looks because you might be awkward, you're not going to dance. And so it's not so much a matter of, I don't want people to try to find courage. I want people to try to find safety. Go looking for places where, with the ayahuasca, like, go looking for places where it feels safe for you to be vulnerable. And then it'll just start expressing itself. And for those of us who want people to be who they really are, it's incumbent upon us to help them feel safe.
That's really very powerful. I appreciate that very much. And just to remind everyone, we are speaking with David Sauvage. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Amazingly, you did. I'm impressed.
And he is has a one-man show called Empath. And it is at the Theater Lab. And the Theater Lab is, you can find it, let's see, it's on West 36th Street, 357 West 36th Street on the third floor. And you can get tickets still. It's open till December 9th. And I see here that there is a phone number I believe people can call. I'm looking at a web page here that's just on theater, and it says 866-811-4111, and I think that's connected to webovationtix.com. But as you said, David, they should go to your website, and that seems to be the very easiest solution. What is your website again?
It's just empath.nyc, empath.nyc.
NYC. Okay, that is pretty easy to get to, I think. So empath.nyc will get you to the website, and you can find out so much more about this work that we've been speaking of today. And we still have a little time, David, if you have more that you'd like to share about your show and how you are creating that safe space for people to at least be introduced to what this phenomena is, to be an empath, because everybody has some level of capacity for this.
If you're somebody who knows you have certain intuitive abilities, you've known things you didn't know how you knew, you occasionally have the experience of feeling what other people are feeling, but maybe you don't have words for it, or you might be overwhelmed because you work with people a lot and you're good at it. When you're really good, you're great, but sometimes you shut down because it's too much, which happens often with teachers or social workers or psychologists, or anybody who's really needs to be connected with people to do a great job at their job. If you're great at it, chances are you're going to go through periods where you're overwhelmed. And the reason you're great at it is because you feel intuitively what the other person is feeling. So by putting language to this omnipresent phenomenon and showing a degree of mastery with it, I'm inviting people to acknowledge these capacities within them and to go on their own journey to figure out how to work with it and process it in healthier and healthier ways. And for those of you who don't really resonate with any of that, that's fine. That was my journey. My journey led me to discovery of my empathic abilities, and your journey might lead you on a completely other path. and that's your journey, and that's just as good as mine. But what I'm doing by saying, hey, I started out this empirically minded, rational skeptic. I grew up in L.A. I live in New York. I went to Columbia undergrad. I have an MBA from UCLA. And there's nothing in my background that I didn't grow up in a commune. Like, I'm a relatively normal Jewish kid. And so if my journey led me from an MBA at UCLA to being a semi-professional and now professional intuitive, well, just by healing what needed to heal and following the signs wherever they led, that can maybe inspire you to go on your own journey. What wants to come out of you when you heal what wants to be healed and follow the signs, your signs, wherever they lead. And so I'm inviting people to go on their own journeys too.
And as you say, whatever that cultivation and flowering becomes, nobody knows because we're all different people. So I also want to remind people about Empath. It's actually directed by Katie Davis. Lighting and sound design is by Jake DeGroot. And the show is presented by Theater Lab in partnership with The Joy Effect. I like to give people their due because nothing happens alone. We all work together to make this work. And Theater Lab is located at 357 West 36th Street on the third floor. And so this program airs Saturday, 6 p.m. There is a show on Saturday at 8 p.m., so you could potentially get there. And it goes on Sunday at 5 p.m., and then next week, Thursday, the 6th at 8 p.m., Friday the 7th at 8 p.m., and on Saturday and Sunday again. So there's plenty, plenty of opportunity for folks to have this experience. And also, I would say it isn't necessary. Empathery is not required. I'm sure people can just go and enjoy the show.
Absolutely.
And for what it is, it's theater, and it's an experience in which you and your fellow theater goers will be in a safe place, and then you can just see what it is for yourself and enjoy it. And I'm sure everyone will walk away with something significant from this performance. And again, we're speaking with David Sauvage, and we are talking about Empath at the Theater Lab, 357 West 36th Street. In New York, in Manhattan. So I'm really, really grateful and happy that you were able to join me today, David. It's been a great conversation. I'd love to talk to you again sometime.
I super appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. This is a lot of fun for me.
Excellent, excellent. So I'll say goodbye for now, and we'll pick this up again at the Theater Lab with Empath.
So thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Really appreciate it.